The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn
Beck. Let me see if I can help you understand the budget deal that the Senate just made using Oprah Winfrey and Star Wars. The national debt is now over $20 trillion. I believe it's $22 trillion, but I haven't checked my watch today. The annual GDP of the United States of America is $19 trillion. And our budget is $4 trillion. Now, let's just think about this one for a second. Everybody who makes any money, any business, from GE to the kid that's mowing lawns to the Girl Scout cookies with the Girl Scouts selling them door to door, that's all part of the $19 trillion in our GDP. How much money are we making as a country? And the government is spending $4 trillion of that. Now, I'm not a mathematician, but I play one on TV. I believe that that's about 20% of all of the cash. This government is spending 20% of every single penny that anyone in this country has earned. That's not going to last. That's why we're borrowing. So now let's look at this. Apparently, Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer, who learned their math from Common Core, apparently agreed not to cut the out-of-control spending, but to increase it by $300 billion. And if this is approved by the House, the budget will be locked in till 2020. They're not going to pass another budget, guys, until 2020. They'll say that. They will, but they're not going to pass a budget. We haven't passed one in, what, 10 years? Is there not even the appearance anymore of anyone in the Senate that is trying to, again, appear to be fiscally conservative? I'm just curious. Did the Senate Republican leadership all eat Tide Pods yesterday? What the hell happened? Is there some new virus that induces high fever, diarrhea, and turns conservatives into liberals? I'm not sure. Because this is money that we do not have and we have to borrow. Has anybody noticed that this year alone, by September, we have to borrow an additional $1 trillion? $1,085% increase from last year? And we have no plan to pay any of this back. But that didn't stop Mitch McConnell. Nope. He's in there for the people. He's the one handling the Democratic concession after concession after concession. And here's how he handled it. You get $1 billion, and you get $1 billion, and you get $1 billion. Check under your seats. The last time I checked, the Republicans controlled every branch of the government. So why are we acting like we're playing this game with less players on the field? I'm just wondering. Because if this is the new norm, how bad is it going to be when the Democrats take both houses and the presidency eventually? How bad is it going to be when they just have the House and the Senate? Now the deal goes back to the House. And if something doesn't happen to stop this, we're in for a dangerous downward spiral of spending that doesn't ever stop. All eyes are on you, Freedom Caucus. Hurry, Freedom Caucus. You're our only hope. You might be the only remaining conservatives left on Capitol Hill. Congratulations to the United States of America. Last year, we historically voted for Republicans in the House, the Senate, and the executive branch. And now, with the inclusion of amnesty and the dumpster fire of a budget, what we're getting in return is a Republican majority with Democratic policies.
It's Thursday, February 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, it's really strange, Stu. You see this as a huge loss. You see any upside on this?
I mean, I guess that we won't be dealing with, we need to pass a new continuing resolution or a government shutdown every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to not have to deal with that. Other than that, though, I mean, it's a gigantic increase in spending. You know, people keep saying, oh, it's a $300 billion deal. It's not a $300 billion deal. It basically, the way this works is there's a $150 billion per year increase in spending as part of this deal. But that just becomes the new baseline of the budget. So every budget negotiation.
Draconian cuts.
Right.
Stu, draconian cuts.
They're not going to come in and say, okay, hey, by the way, we're going to cut back to what we had 2 years ago at $150 billion. Right.
The cupboards are bare.
Exactly. So every negotiation will now start from this $150 billion per year increase. And so really what this is a $1.5 trillion bill, which would increase spending that much over 10 years. Now, $1.5 trillion is also what they say the quote-unquote cost of the tax plan was. So now you've cut the revenues by $1.5 trillion and increased spending by $1.5 trillion over the same decade. And that's within the last 3 months. That doesn't include what's supposed to come next with infrastructure and family leave. And
yeah, we're at $3 trillion of cutting taxes, $1.5, and then increasing spending, $1.5. You're at $3 trillion. He wants to now have a $1.7 or $1.5 or $1.3, whatever it is, $1 trillion stimulus package on top of that. Mm-hmm. So we're now at 4.3 to 4.7 in 1 year.
Yeah.
In 1 year.
And this is, I mean, so far we haven't heard from the White House whether they agree with this deal. I mean, they said they were happy that a deal was done, but they haven't talked about specifics. We don't know if it's going to pass the House. But so step one is this $1.5 trillion. It's not $300 billion, despite what everybody's saying. And it's going to be more than that because, of course, every negotiation is going to increase the budget after this. Mm-hmm. The other part is, and this is a really scary one if you're a conservative, apparently, because it's going to be a two-year budget deal, they likely will not go on and do another budget in 2019.
Guaranteed.
This is Nerdsville, but the bottom line is they can't get another reconciliation bill through without the budget. So that would mean that they have no opportunity to pass something like, let's say, Obamacare repeal with 50 to 51 votes, depending on, obviously, Pence is there, so 50. But so they would have to get to 60 votes for everything, which means they're not going to get anything passed. You don't want that to happen, obviously. I don't think it necessarily means it's impossible, but it makes it a lot less likely that they would do something like that.
Well, and here's the good thing. DACA is going to go up for a vote, too. So,
yeah, you're going to get, DACA times 2.5.
Yeah, but that's, I think, what all the conservatives wanted was DACA times 2.5. With the passage also of comprehensive immigration reform and a path to citizenship.
Plus the trillions of dollars in spending. Win, win, win. I mean, I think there's an argument to be made here that, you know, look, Democrats went into this, they tried to shut the government down. Didn't work out well for them. Now they're coming back to the table with a big, this was a big surprise yesterday. And, you know, it was a deal between McConnell and Schumer. Basically, what Republicans got.
The two
got,
guys that I think America says, we're in safe hands with those two clowns.
Yeah. What Republicans got was increased military spending, which is, you know, that's an important priority. However, on the other side of that, you got almost as much spending on programs for Democrats. As Chuck Schumer went through a big list of them in his sort of.
Here, you got to listen to it. I can't take all of it, but here's a little bit of Chuck Schumer yesterday.
Alongside the increase in defense spending, the budget deal will lift funding for domestic programs by $131 billion. Mm-hmm. It will fully repeal the domestic sequester caps while securing $57 billion in additional funding, including $6 billion to fight against the opioid and mental health crises.
Okay.
$5.8 billion for the bipartisan child care development block grant.
Oh, dear God.
$4 billion to rebuild and improve veterans' hospitals and clinics. $2 billion for critical research at the National Institutes in Health.
On what?
And $20 billion to augment our existing infrastructure programs,
What?
Including surface transportation, rural water and wastewater, clean and safe drinking water.
What does that mean?
rural broadband, so desperately needed in large parts of rural America.
We got broadband.
And energy infrastructure.
Holy cow.
And $4 billion.
Okay, stop. I can't take it anymore.
This went on and
on and on and on and on and on and on and on and on and on and on and on, declaring victory. Now, may I give you an opposing view of what I've just said, that what I've just said is, old-time thinking. What we've just been talking about is old-timey.
Old-timey thinking.
Old-timey thinking. When you expected a conservative and a constitutionalist to actually be a conservative and a constitutionalist. Now, I believe on both sides, it's all about winning. I just want to shut the other side up. And so you could look at this, and I think many Americans are looking at it this way, even though the amnesty thing, we said, we asked you, what is the one thing that would be a tripwire that would turn you against Donald Trump? What is there anything that this guy could do? The calls were unanimous. Yes, the border, amnesty. Well, he's just given it, and nobody cares. Nobody cares. So old-timey thinking is somebody cares. Today's thinking is nobody cares. It's just about winning. So let me look at it. Let me do the analysis from just the point of we won. The Democrats have lost an incredible defeat of shutting down the government. And they looked horrible. Then they went into the State of the Union where they sat on their hands and they didn't applaud for anything that was mainstream America. Then they sat on their hands when the president did the thing that anybody who voted for Trump said they would abandon him if he ever did it. He offered them DACA times 2.5 plus a path to citizenship. And they looked horrible. They didn't cheer. They didn't embrace it at all. In fact, they said he was taking people hostage. Then Nancy Pelosi did a filibuster that was a buster. Right. It was.
And it wasn't a filibuster because there's no filibuster in the House.
No.
But that's a whole other situation.
It was horrible.
Right.
And the Democrats all know that. And the Democrats are all the ones who are running for midterm said, thank you, Nancy. You just lost the election for me. That's what Democrat. That's what's happening in the Democratic circles. Another win for the Republicans. They also now have a president who has a chief of staff who declared 2 days ago that he is the champion of those who were here illegally. He's their champion. The Democrats have lost that as well. Hmm. So if you don't care about, you know, what we always said we cared. I'm sorry, I'm just too old, I guess. If you cared about the things that we said we cared about, this was a bad day yesterday. If you don't, and you're just wanting to win, yesterday was a good day.
It's interesting. I think your perspective is right, but I guess my point would be, you know, what is the definition of win? You know, like, for example,
beating the Democrats.
Let's say this. I come to you.
For most people, beating the Democrats.
I, Stu, come to Glenn Beck, and I say, I want 10 weeks of vacation. Mm-hmm. And you say, no, I'm giving you 0 weeks of vacation. Mm-hmm. Okay? So then I go to the rest of the company, and I say, this guy's a jerk. He's saying 0 weeks of vacation. Do you believe this guy? And I make a big deal about it. Mm-hmm. And I filibuster and I do all those things. And then you come out and you make a big speech in front of the company and say, I am a champion for Stu getting 10 weeks of vacation. And I get my 10 weeks of vacation. And I look like a weirdo because I've been out here fighting and screaming and yelling about it. But you are now the champion of the 10 weeks of vacation. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is I got my 10 weeks of vacation, whether you get credit for it or I get credit for it. And this idea that winning is just the credit is a real problem.
Yes, it is. But
it is realistic.
Let me show you, yes, how realistic it was. Who were the champions of equal rights? Who were the the real champions of civil rights? They were the Republicans.
Right.
The Democrats thwarted it every time it came to the House. Every single time. But in the last hour, It was LBJ, the guy who stood against the same bill when the Republicans introduced it in the 50s mm-hmm. and fought against it the whole time. It was him at the last moment saying, we're presenting a civil rights bill. Look who won. Look who won eventually.
Won what? Right?
I mean, again, I'm only yeah. talking about, I'm talking about the new reality mm-hmm. where principles don't matter. Winning is the only thing that matters.
Glenn Beck.
The story of the FBI informant, the testimony that came out yesterday, is not shocking if you watched our special on Uranium One. I think it was Uranium One. Was that in January or was that last December? We did a 3 or 4 day special on what is happening with Russia, Uranium One, and Hillary Clinton, and it's pretty shocking. We'll post that today up on our YouTube channel at The Blaze, and I urge you to share it with friends. We told you about a guy who was giving testimony and had delivered evidence, quote, mountains of evidence to the FBI and to the government on what was going on, deep corruption throughout our system of government. And it was held secret by Barack Obama. Well, yesterday, while some in the media tried to dismiss this, I don't know what you would call it, government informant, he was valuable enough to have the FBI pay him $50,000 in a check in 2016. He said he was, all of his work was briefed to the president as part of his daily presidential briefings. The FBI forced him to pay $500,000 of his own money to Russian officials as bribes to facilitate his cover. The Bureau never reimbursed him, for that, despite the praise for his work. That's why he turned on them. And I have an interesting perspective on that if we can get to it a little later. But he said Russian and American executives are implicated in the bribery scheme, and they asked him to try to get the Uranium One deal approved by the Obama administration. He provided documentation of the corruption and crimes taking place to help Russia and the Obama administration months before they made a series of decisions that directly benefited Vladimir Putin. There's a long string of things, including the what he describes as money laundering with the Clinton Foundation and the millions of dollars the Clinton Foundation received at the same time, and he was part of it. More coming up.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Something I haven't mentioned this week, and I'm going to address tomorrow. Over the weekend, the world got a little bit dimmer because we lost truly, truly a great man. His name is John Huntsman Sr. If you are a longtime listener of this program, he has appeared on my program several times. And the reason why I haven't talked about it is I tend to get a little emotional. He, in many ways, was a father figure in my life. at exactly the time I needed a father figure. And it's just a complex thing. I'm going to his funeral on Saturday, and we never had a funeral for my father. We weren't allowed to because of a family squabble, so I never attended, and neither did my sisters, anything to memorialize my father's passing. So I'm a little nervous about Saturday, because I've never met a greater man. I've never met a more giving man, and a more forgiving man. You know, that's one thing that we really have a hard time with is forgiveness. I talked about it on Monday. Forgiveness is hard because we want other people to pay. You know, I'm having a hard time right now with the press because, you know, they're questioning the president. Is he a racist? They're questioning the president, saying, you know, is he a totalitarian dictator? All the things that we were afraid of under Obama. And we weren't allowed to say it. And now that they're saying it, I am so angry. I can't even get past it. And I have to. I can't get past the fact. Are you kidding me? And if I can't get past that, but I want them to say it, and they're not going to. And that's the thinking of a madman trying to. I got to let go of the things that I can't control. But forgiving each other and forgiving yourself is really hard. Really hard. Because, as I pointed out earlier this week, forgiveness requires two things: self-worth and humility. Being humble enough to say, hey, I understand. And having enough self-worth when it comes to you that you deserve forgiveness. They never go hand in hand, and they have to. I talked about this, and then I got a phone call at the end of the show, 2 hours later, from a former vet who was distraught and said, you know, I only listened to you from time to time, and I never expected to get anything from you. And thank you. He said, I realized, and he had pulled his truck over, and he had sat there for about an hour and a half crying. And he said, I realized how much I hate myself. And I hate myself because I don't feel useful. I feel worthless. I served. I was in the military and I served. And now I come back and I'm not. And I hate myself. I have gone through that. I'm a recovering alcoholic. And I hated myself so much because of the lies I told myself. You're weak, you're pathetic, you can't even make it a day without a drink. You promised yourself last night or yesterday morning when you got up that you weren't going to drink yesterday, and then you did. You made some excuse. I know, well, I'm not going to drink today. And then I would drink, and I hated myself. I had to, actually, every time I walked into the bathroom, I had to open up my mirror so I didn't look myself in the eye anymore. I could not look myself in the eye. That was the end. That was the end. And I didn't know how to get out of it. And I had no self-worth, and there was no forgiveness for me. I wasn't worthy. And I hated people. No, I didn't. I hated myself. It's kind of what this veteran said when he called this week, and I understood. And we've gotten an awful lot of email on it. One stuck out to me, and I want to read it to you. Dear Mr. Beck, my name is Hannah Hastings. I'm engaged to an amazing man. Kyle listens to your podcast faithfully every single morning, to the point of sometimes I just can't shut him up about his heroes, Pat and Stu, and you. He's a huge fan of all of you, and on most days, your podcast moves him to tears. Kyle is a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. He served 4 years and went on 2 deployments overseas, one of the 2 times to Iraq. Today, he listened in, and he was moved. He was moved at hearing that veteran speak because that's exactly the way he feels. I think whether he'll address it or not, his wounds go a lot deeper than his pride will let him show. Kyle is an amazing, wonderful man. However, like the fellow veteran said on your show this morning, he feels useless now. He's served, and now he feels that he has nothing to show for it other than a couple of ribbons and a certificate of completion. This veteran of mine is worth so much more than he knows. I'm writing to you hoping that maybe you'll give him a shout-out on the show one morning, just to let him know that you, his hero, knows that he exists and he is not alone. As I'm typing this in the other room, I'm listening to the strongest man I know sniffle and break down over somebody finally understanding exactly how he feels. Thank you for your time. I want to acknowledge that you've made an impact on someone else's life just by being you. But would you please keep him in your prayers? I hope God can touch you and others in the way he's touched me by gracing me with Kyle now in my life. Thanks. Hannah Hastings, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Kyle, I got this letter 3 days ago, and I've been writing back and forth with your fiance. The first thing you need to do is marry that woman. She loves you. I want you to know that while I can't relate to your military experience, and honestly, I praise God for that, I do understand your feelings. I want you to know in the early 90s, I had a moment where I had to choose life or death, and my mom committed suicide. And I was at about her same age that when she committed suicide, and I had to choose. And I had no idea how to live. I had no idea how to be happy. I had no idea how to be a good man, a good father. None of it. I was completely lost. And I knew that night, it was a Christmas Eve, I knew that night that I would either live or die. That I either had to pick myself up and figure out how to live, or just lay down and die. Because of my childhood, some would say it made it easier for me to lay down and die, but because of my childhood, I knew that suicide was not an answer. It was the most selfish thing that could happen. And I was a coward. I couldn't do it. So I decided to stand. And I wish I could tell you that the next day, everything was great, but it wasn't. It was kind of the same. Except for one thing. I had made a choice, and I was determined to find a way. Question with boldness even the very existence of God, for if there be a God, he must surely rather honest questions over blindfolded fear. Dedicate yourself to asking the hardest, most honest questions that you can. Ask them of yourself, ask them of others. Be the opposite of what the world is. Don't try to win. Just try to find out the truth. Try to reconcile that truth with your life. I will make you this promise, Kyle, that if you dedicate yourself to finding the truth with humility by asking honest questions, a year from now, your life is going to start blossoming. You will see Hannah in an entirely new light. You'll see the world as it really is. You have tremendous, tremendous value. I am a firm believer that we were all born at this time for a reason. And no matter who you are, your reason has not yet happened. Spend every second of this short life trying to make the best of it and the most of it. Because when you get to the other side, I think you'll be surprised. Holy crap. It was that? That was my reason? Wow. But look at all the other things that I got to do and I experienced because I was honestly searching for a better way to live.
When you need some help selling your home, you probably go to some person that you kind of know that says they're a real estate agent or they took a real estate agent class once. That's not enough. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars here. This is the biggest investment you'll probably ever make in your entire life. You need someone who really knows what they're doing. Real Estate Agents I Trust is a network of over 1,200 agents all over America that are rigorously qualified by Glenn's team. This is a company Glenn started. Their experience, their marketing plans, their character, and the results they get for their clients are the barometers that the team uses to ensure that the network is made up of only the best agents in America. They're also fans of Glenn, and they listen to the show. If you need to sell a house fast and for the most money, or if you're looking to buy, go to realestateagentsitrust.com, and you'll be introduced to the best agent in your town. This is an easy step, and it's really important. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. Let these agents earn your business. Get moving with realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck.
So, 140,000 photos of smiling babies. All of them beautiful, all of them full of wonder, all of them unknowingly competing, you know, in that cutthroat contest to be the cutest for Gerber. Courtney didn't think her son Lucas had a chance, but she submitted the picture anyway. It took her 5 seconds to post the photo along with the contest hashtag, and then she forgot about it. 2 weeks later, something arrived in the mail. Courtney and her husband Jason were informed that Lucas had been chosen as Gerber's spokesbaby for 2018. Not only had he won the coveted position of and $50,000, he also made history because Lucas is the first Down syndrome baby to become a Gerber baby. Gerber, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart. You give me hope in humanity that compassion is still alive. The fact that you have recognized that this baby born with Down syndrome is deserving of love, care, and a future flies in the face of everything that the world is battling with right now. Today, 100% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted in Iceland. Reykjavik is the first city to have now a zero population growth of Down syndrome children. The Dutch National Institute of Public Health calculated the cost of caring what they called callously a downer and publicly shamed a man with Down syndrome on video because his life cost them 10 times the amount of someone without Down syndrome. Iceland and the Netherlands, shame on you. You're on the wrong side of history. But I choose to let my heart be full of joy for Lucas and his parents. Thank you. Thank you, Gerber, for recognizing the right to life of children with Down syndrome.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.